Gary Gensler and the SEC refused to clarify on whether Ether was a security, but privately, it seems they've had an answer for a year. Good morning. You're listening to the Rise in Crypto podcast by Cointelegraph with me, Robert Baggs, steering you through the crypto cosmos with daily dispatches from the digital frontier. If you want to debrief every morning on the biggest stories happening in crypto, you better click that follow button. Grab yourself a coffee and let's get into it. It is an important episode today as we cover some of the most impactful stories in crypto. First, however, we are going to start with a Bitcoin rundown, including how Bitcoin risks posting the worst monthly returns since November 2022. Then we'll look at why a lawyer has slammed the DOJ over their arguments against the Tornado Cash developer, before moving on to another flagship legal case with the SEC and Gary Gensler. And finally, we will look at ZackXBT's 15-month investigation of the Lazarus Group. The post-halving price slump appears to be in full effect at the moment, as despite the Hong Kong ETFs offering a little bit of price relief, BTC has slipped back down. I also believe, based on the observations of smarter ETF folk like Eric Balchunas, that the hype around these Hong Kong ETFs might be overcooked and we could see some underwhelming inflows which could further weigh down BTC's price. However, Keith Allen, the co-founder of trading resource Material Indicators, said, "Will Hong Kong bulls stampede through resistance at $65,500, or will they take a more tempered approach and wait for the monthly close and Wednesday's remarks from Fed Chair Powell to set the tone for May?" Now, if the latter is true, we will almost certainly see Bitcoin's worst monthly close of 2024 and potentially the worst monthly returns since November 2022. April is looking to post around minus 12% returns at the moment after back-to-back green months since September last year. Although there are some concerns over Bitcoin's performance, it is so neatly in line with post-halvings, it doesn't really feel worrying to me. But what do you think? Share your thoughts with us on at Cointelegraph and at RKBags on X and at RKBags on Warpcast. Yesterday, another key part of the SEC and Ethereum saga unfolded. As we wait for the final deadline on the first spot Ether ETF application, we have plenty to busy ourselves with. Last week, I explained that the Ethereum software firm, Consensus, filed a lawsuit against the SEC and all five commissioners over claims that the agency plans to regulate ETH as a security. The filing is reported to have come as a response to a Wells notice from the SEC stating its plan to sue Consensus for failure to comply with federal securities laws. So needless to say, a lot hinges on how Ether is categorized, and the SEC and Gary Gensler have been evasive on that, with Gensler refusing to clarify when asked last year. The only concrete guidance to date has been under the former SEC chair, Jay Clayton, who stated it was not a security, and then in June 2018, when the then director of corporation finance, Bill Hinman, stated in a speech the SEC's position that Ether, alongside Bitcoin, was not a security. According to a new filing, however, the head of the SEC's Division of Enforcement, Gurbir Gruel, approved a formal investigation into Ether's status as a security. The investigation is known as Ethereum 2.0, and it authorized the subpoenaing of individuals and entities involved in buying and selling Ether. This happened at the end of March 2023, which was just 5 days before Gensler appeared before the House Financial Services Committee, which is when he refused to answer repeated requests for clarity on whether the SEC believes Ether to be a security or not. So some of this latest filing is very interesting, and it was unearthed by the Fox Business producer Eleanor Terrett. That is, the SEC and its chair, Gary Gensler, believed Ether to be a security and have done for some time. Terrett wrote on X that the SEC and Gensler appear to have believed for at least a year that Ether was an unregistered security trading out of compliance with current federal regulations. This has naturally caused a bit of backlash over why this wasn't made public, and it does feel to a legal layman like me as if the SEC and Gary Gensler have been obstructive, as if the intention was to try and catch out companies buying and selling Ethereum. So it is getting clearer why Consensus has brought a lawsuit against the five commissioners of the SEC and the SEC itself. We're going to stay with the legal world and look at some harsh criticism of the US Department of Justice's arguments against the crypto mixer Tornado Cash and its developer Roman Storm. The criticisms came from Amanda Tuminelli, the legal chief at DeFi Education Fund, and they addressed the DOJ's opposition to Storms's motion to dismiss conspiracy and money laundering charges, as Tuminelli says that the DOJ's arguments against Storms's motion were filled with technical inaccuracies, obvious disdain for privacy and emerging technology, and misapplication of the law. The DOJ also argued that Storm claimed that misconduct through computer software is absolutely protected, and that crypto was inherently beyond the reach of law enforcement. Though this apparently wasn't true, and Tuminelli hit back saying, "This is simply not what Storm argued in his motion. It is difficult to imagine how this is not intentionally misleading." Along with this, Tuminelli also slammed prosecutors for not understanding how immutable smart contract protocols work, as the DOJ claims Storm and his co-founder, Roman Semenov, could have done something about the unlawful activity on Tornado Cash, but chose not to. Now, as well as what the DOJ said, Tuminelli highlighted what they didn't say. For example, they ignored the arguments in the DeFi Education Fund's amicus brief that argue that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the IEEPA, which gives the president power to regulate unusual and extraordinary threats, has never been used and should not be used to penalize a software developer that never directly engaged with or solicited conduct with a sanctioned entity. Tuminelli took the DOJ's lack of comments on this as a compliment. "I can't stress how important this case could be for crypto, freedom on the internet, and for privacy." The financial writer John Paul Koning wrote on X that the case against Storm may end up being the seminal crypto court case, adding that it is really about who, if anyone, is liable for smart contracts and the interfaces that access smart contracts, and to what degree. ZackXBT gets a mention most weeks on the Rise in Crypto podcast, and I am a loud supporter of his. I do not know Zach. We've never spoken, in fact. I just appreciate the work he does to uncover and unmask the unscrupulous. Crypto is a space I value so much that I threw myself into it full time and at a tumultuous point in my life, but I will never be naive to its pitfalls and imperfections. One glaring flaw is that still, after years of fundamental improvements, it is riddled with scammers and hackers, some of whom are startlingly proficient at it. Zach is one of the foremost forces combating this blight, and while he alone cannot change the ship's course, he is more impactful than any one person has the business being. So, last week, when he posted on X that he was finishing a 15-plus month investigation that has been his biggest project to date, I set an alarm for when it was scheduled to drop. Well, that was yesterday, and it's one hell of a case. The investigation is on the Lazarus Group, an infamous collection of hackers that is believed to be state-backed by North Korea. In total, and I covered this some months back, it's estimated that the Lazarus Group has stolen over $3 billion in crypto and digital assets in the 6 years leading up to 2023. ZackXBT's work looks at how the North Korean hackers managed to launder over $200 million of their loot from 2020 to 2023 across more than 25 hacks. The full report is a must read, and I will link it in the episode's description, but I want to give you the highlights. The Lazarus Group used a combination of crypto mixing services and peer-to-peer, P2P, marketplaces to get the stolen assets into traditional currencies. Zach wrote, "Identified accounts at NoOne's and Paxful, P2P marketplaces, that received funds from the hacks and were used to convert crypto to fiat." Zach identified the two usernames used as EasyGoatfish351 and FairJunko470. The hacked funds were converted to the stablecoin USDT, Tether, before being exchanged for cash and drawn down. A small portion of the stolen funds has been caught in a blacklist net, with Tether freezing $374,000 in November last year, and three out of the four stablecoin issuers locking up an additional $3.4 million. Now, when you look at the hacked companies during this period, you'll see so many seven-figure hauls that you almost become numb to it. But then there are the ones that made headlines, like the Maverick founder, who was hacked for $8.8 million in October 2023, the Nexus Mutual founder in December 2020 for $8 million, the BZX hack in November 2021 for $55 million, and then the Lazarus Group's most brutal success, the EasyFi founder for $81 million in April 2021. On top of these, it is also believed that the Lazarus Group was behind the Ronin Bridge hack of 2022, which was one of the biggest heists in crypto history, taking $625 million worth of crypto. Furthermore, last year, the North Korean hacking collective were responsible for at least 17% of the total funds stolen in the industry. And don't think that this is a legacy problem either. It is still very relevant. As recent as this month, the group has been using LinkedIn to target victims as a fake recruiter, then requesting that the victims download two coding challenges as part of the interview process, which upon download will infect the device with malware, allowing remote access of it. So be vigilant. I want to end by recognizing something I haven't seen anyone else mention about this investigation. ZackXBT might be pseudonymous, but by revealing how the Lazarus Group has laundered a large portion of its stolen funds, he must have put a target on his back to these hackers. And they happen to be the most pernicious and effective hackers in the space, who are also state-sponsored. I have no doubt in my mind that Zack was aware of that risk going in, and it makes the investigation all the more commendable. Well, that was a heavy episode, but that is it for today, so consider yourself informed. Thank you for listening to the Rise in Crypto podcast by Cointelegraph. If you're enjoying these daily updates, please make sure you let us know by following, subscribing, or leaving a review. You can also join our new Rise in Crypto community on Warpcast with the channel name RNC, where I share previews of the next day's episode and we discuss all the major stories in crypto. Okay, have a great day. Let's do this again tomorrow.